let me go back to one of the problems that arose as editor in 58-59. George Bailey, as executive secretary, kept a very tight rein on finances. Most of that time, the IRE was in the black, making plenty of money, in fact, because of preceding advertising. But and the membership was going up drastically. This was the real boost after the electronics boom started. But George would watch this, and come August, the advertising budget maybe hadn't quite reached target. Well, first he'd go after Will Kopp, who was the commission merchant on advertising. In other words, he was not really an employee. He did it on commission. But he was the advertising department. He'd go after Will first, and Will would resign. And the next day, he rehired. And then George would come to me as editor and say, look, we think we got to cut some pages. And so he and I would go around and finally, of course, he'd cut some pages. Because in a professional society, there is only one place you can cut the budget. There's only one place. That's publication. It's the only place that has any give at any given time. And so you'd give a little bit and cut some pages. And George would be happy. And at the end of the year, he'd have his profit. The other thing that we did have to do in there, proceedings up to that time had been a journal in which the editorial matter was one piece and the advertising was entirely separate, so that in binding you could eliminate the advertising and keep just the editorial material. Well, the advertisers, of course, don't care for this. They like to have editorial material interleaved so you'll see their ad. And so advertising, one of those years, is down a little bit, so we felt we had to throw them a sop. And again, George and I talked it over, and we decided that items of only temporal interest, institute news, and that sort of thing, would be interleaved in some of the advertising pages.
This is a flip point date. What's the date of this?
Probably late 58, 59, somewhere in there. More likely mid 59. And so that was a profound change at that time, because it was inconsistent with professional journals as a whole, but a professional journal that makes money was inconsistent too. And of course I mention this because this has been a part of Spectrum from the very beginning. We wanted that because I felt all along that the advertising in these journals, what was in proceedings then or is in Spectrum now, was often as educational as some of the technical material, or more so. We get that kind of ad. And so I felt anything that would get the member to dig into it was probably good for him. So George and I got along very well. We never did have a scrap, but it was standard understanding that Will Kopp would resign once or twice a year from the advertising. But he was a marvelous salesman because he was a little bastard who wouldn't take no. And he could be kicked out of more offices and be back the next day for his ad. But those were some of the experiences.
When you do consolidate, when the merger did occur, and you're tapped to be editor of IEEE, the very first editor, did the very factor of the merger create a situation which allowed for ease of introducing innovations? And were there any at that point?
Yes, and you'll find this in the paper I wrote in Spectrum called The Genesis of an Editorial Policy. I've got a copy here for you tomorrow. But to answer your question specifically, I don't know whether the merger made things easier to introduce new ideas, or whether Woody Gannon and I just went ahead and did them. the editorial board was given the responsibility of coming up with a policy and answering certain questions for the new society. And as we'll discuss tomorrow out of this article, we settled on a new all-member journal, settled on the title Spectrum. And then Woody and I put our heads together and fought it. We didn't ask anybody. As a result of the plotting, we were going to have an IEEE Scientific American. That was our target. We were going to use color, which was unheard of in technical magazines. Now, when I say technical magazines, I'm thinking of the kind of publication of the other societies in the engineering building, for instance. Color was unheard of. So we went out and hired an art editor so we could have color covers and could use color and proper art layouts of curves and photographs and whatnot in our articles. And we had learned from our special issue experience that you didn't always get the proper kind of article, even when you asked for it. We wanted to get the article we wanted in a hurry sometimes. So we hired a technical writer. This was Gordon Friedlander. We were going to have a professional writing staff. First one, and this was heresy, around 345 East 47th Street 2. You can't have a professional journal written by non-engineers. But we did it. Gordon Friedlander. And now, of course, we've got a whole stable of them there. And it worked. As I say, Woody and I don't remember asking anybody. We just sat down and did it. And told the general manager, which was Don Fink, what we were doing. And of course, Don being the kind of man with the editorial experience he'd had, he saw the value of these and covered the budget.